from Katanning to Bala Cynwyd, Bedford to Bethlehem, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, they are called ghost teachers, public school teachers paid by taxpayers who teach no classes but spend their time doing union business. The practice is coming to an end, and David Osborne of the Fairness Center is here with details. And the federal government has made big strides toward criminal justice reform. And Pennsylvania has taken a few steps as well, but more remains to be done. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Osborne in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Spotlight PA reports that top officials in the Pennsylvania Senate have, quote, scrubbed thousands of detailed explanations about its expenses from official records, end quote. The redactions were made to documents requested by Spotlight PA and the Caucus newspaper. The lack of transparency drew a rebuke from Terry Mutchler, who served as the first director of the state's Office of Open Records, who termed it, quote, a new level of anti-transparency, end quote. Pennsylvania's open records law requires government agencies to produce all records relevant to a request. A bill sponsored by State Representative Chris Dush is now before the House that would make it a third-degree felony to alter government documents after an open records request has been made. Quote, if they're producing a record, then the record in full should be subject to the law, end quote, explained Dush. Pennsylvania residents are reminded October 1st is the deadline to obtain a real ID-compliant driver's license. Such licenses will be required identification to, among other things, enter a federal courthouse or building and to board an airplane. The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation says it is making significant progress in meeting demand for the new Real ID licenses. Since March 1, 2019, when they first became available, PennDOT has processed more than 826,000 Real ID compliant licenses. The agency expects 1.3 million to be issued. There is no requirement to get a Real ID license. If the holder of a regular driver's license wants to use other forms of ID, such as a valid U.S. passport or military ID. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. For decades, Pennsylvania taxpayers have been paying the salaries and benefits for teachers who don't set foot in the classroom, but rather spend their days doing work for their labor union. They are known as ghost teachers, and taxpayers in the Allentown School District objected. Now the union has agreed to end the practice. The Fairness Center handled the case, and we have with us the president and general counsel of the Fairness Center, David Osborne. David, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. David, the term ghost teacher probably conjures up image of something that occurs at Halloween in school districts, but this has a much more serious meaning to it than that. Can you tell us what you mean by the term ghost teacher?
Yeah, in classrooms all across our country, but particularly here in Pennsylvania, up until very recently, there were a number of people who should be working as teachers in our public schools, but you wouldn't find them in the public school. They're getting paid as if they were there. They're getting salary and benefits and pension credits as if they were teaching in the school, but they're not there. Where are they? They're working full-time for public sector unions as presidents, vice presidents, treasurers, other officials.
Is this, or has this in the past, been a widespread practice among school districts across Pennsylvania?
Yep, sure has been, yeah. What happened very recently is that the Fairness Center was contacted by some folks who'd had enough of this. They're taxpayers in the Allentown area who knew it was going on and who knew that the taxpayers were paying for it, reached out to us, and we filed a lawsuit for them back in 2016 over this issue. And it had some immediate effects, all positive. One, the school district had to reassess its practice, which we call ghost teaching. The pension system also immediately revoked pensions for these teachers, the pensions that they earned while they were working, not for the school, but full-time for the unions. And then the unions agreed to reimburse school districts for the costs of this practice going forward. In other words, they still wanted their union officials to be former teachers, but they didn't make the taxpayers foot the bill.
I was going to say, this sounds to me like taxpayers are paying the cost of administering labor unions.
Well, that's exactly what was happening. And this isn't just a school district problem. I'll say I think this is probably part of the collective bargaining process throughout Pennsylvania and other sectors. But at least this case caused the public sector unions in Pennsylvania to reconsider that.
So the end result was the practice has largely ended without having to be fully adjudicated in the court system?
Well, yeah, it's almost as an immediate result. Like I said, a lot of these folks, the union started to reconsider this practice. But I'll tell you why we're talking about this case now, 4 years later, is that even after that, the PSEA, the largest teachers union in the state, insisted on getting the pension credits back for its teachers, even though they had not been working in the school. Our clients intervened in that action to keep them from doing that. And after 4 years of nearly 4 years of fighting over it, the teachers union has finally relented and agreed, instead of getting taxpayers to foot the bill for these folks' pension, they would purchase annuities to make their own officials whole, which is exactly what should have been happening from the beginning.
Going back, however, you had this practice taking place for many, many years. Was part of this any sort of reimbursement to school districts for past practice, or was this from a set date going forward?
This is from a set date going forward. And, you know, Allentown is the school district is not doing well. It is one of the most poorly performing school districts in the country. So I do think it's fair to question whether the union really cares about that. Our clients have fought long and hard for the victories that they've gotten, but the union ultimately is still responsible for the damage it's caused.
To your knowledge, is this practice now ending, hopefully, of ghost teachers, is that limited to Pennsylvania, or is this something that has occurred in other states around the country?
No, it's definitely happening, Loman, across the country. In fact, there's a case now at the New Jersey Supreme Court, so just over the border, where New Jersey Supreme Court is considering whether to affirm or to reverse a lower court holding that a similar practice, ghost teaching, is contrary to public policy.
We have been talking about the practice of ghost teachers in Pennsylvania. Now, David, there's been another storyline that we have followed here on Lincoln Radio Journal along with you for several years, and that has been our friend Mark Janis, who in a landmark Supreme Court case a couple of years ago got the Supreme Court to reaffirm the right that individuals can be employed by a government, a public sector labor union, not be forced to pay union dues or any other types of payment to them. Mark is back before the Supreme Court. Can you tell us what the next step is here?
After his case, you're right, landmark case in 2018, the United States Supreme Court sent the case back down to the lower courts. Mark Janis had one remaining issue that the lower courts needed to address. So the U.S. Supreme Court has said that charging non-members of unions a fee simply to keep their public employment is unconstitutional. Well, he's paid those fees for years. So is he entitled to a return of those monies? And now let me back up a little. Typically, a United States Supreme Court ruling on the Constitution is retroactive, entitling someone who's gotten a ruling from the Supreme Court or who is affected by the Supreme Court's ruling to go back to court and to get at least money or damages back to the statute of limitations. That's what Mark Janis wanted to do. The problem is the lower courts have largely treated a union argument that it was acting in good faith as an exception to this general rule of retroactivity. So Mark goes back to claim that money, and the union says, whoa, hold on. We were just following what the U.S. Supreme Court told us to do before Janis. And they make a strong point, at least a strong logical point. The U.S. Supreme Court, Janis actually reversed existing U.S. Supreme Court precedent that dated back to the late 70s. The question for the U.S. Supreme Court is, was Janus retroactive? And is there any such thing in this context as a good faith defense from having to pay money that was unconstitutionally, no question, unconstitutionally taken from someone?
Here in Pennsylvania, of course, Janus ruling applies nationwide. I know you've been involved here in Pennsylvania in a number of lawsuits where unions have not afforded their members their Janus rights. How is that fight going? Are there still ongoing skirmishes over this, or have the labor unions finally accepted the ruling?
No, there are plenty of ongoing skirmishes. One of those skirmishes, yeah, we've sort of taken center stage, and we've got a case up at the Third Circuit for a teacher and some of his other teacher friends named Greg Hartnett. The issue is, so unlike Mark Janus, who was the subject of the Supreme Court case back in 2018, no one has told the lower courts the extent to which Janus applies in any given state. So a lot of unions have taken it for granted that, sure, they can't collect fair share fees anymore. A lot of public employees have assumed that Janus, which was an Illinois case, also applies in their particular state. But it's not a given. What our clients have found is that the PSEA, again, the largest teachers union in the state, is still negotiating for contract provisions that allow them to take fair share fees, basically in violation of Janus. So the case at the Third Circuit is to definitively say, and to stop this kind of behavior, definitively say that fair share fees may no longer be taken in Pennsylvania, and that the statute authorizing that is unconstitutional under Janus.
Again, we have been talking with David Osborne, the president and general counsel at the Fairness Center. And David, tell us a bit about the Fairness Center, what you do, and where we can find you on the web.
Yeah, the Fairness Center provides free legal representation to those who've been hurt by public sector union officials. It typically means that we're filing lawsuits for people, but we also help them without filing a lawsuit. So if any of your listeners have some issues, again, if they're hurt by public sector union officials, please encourage them to visit our website, fairnesscenter.org.
David Osborne of the Fairness Center. David, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Loman.
Raising a Reader is a popular program that helps very young children as they begin their reading journey. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Christine Ward of Raising a Reader. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Christine, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Christine, share a little bit of background about your organization, Raising a Reader.
Raising a Reader is an evidence-based early literacy and family engagement organization, and our mission is to close the literacy opportunity gap among children ages 0 through 6 in high-need communities. And we do this in two ways. One, we teach parents dialogic reading techniques, which is another way to say read aloud techniques, to help engage the child to create those critical synapses with the brain so that when the child enters kindergarten, they are ready to learn. And the other thing we do is we provide a rotating library of developmentally and culturally relevant books to share at home with the family. So a lot of our constituents call us the Red Book Bag Program because we literally have a little red bag that the children take home through their partners, whether it's a public pre-K or a Head Start program or a home visiting program, a playgroup. The children take these books home to read with their families or caregivers and then bring them back the next week and get 4 different books to take home.
Give us a little bit of perspective. Has reading been trending pretty much the way it had for the last couple of decades, or was there a drop in the capacity to read, or where are you in terms of the trend in reading involved in education?
We are a leader in the early education space, and what we are trying to affect is kindergarten readiness by focusing on the parents and the children prior to entering school and getting kind of that critical foundation. So it's critical that the kids are prepared for school. So at the time they enter kindergarten, they are ready to succeed. So what we've noticed that despite many efforts to make sure that we are doing everything we can to prepare these families, it's a systemic problem. And we work with a lot of immigrant families and we're trying to teach them these skills. But as far as what is happening in the education sector, I will say it's still alarming. The number of children at third grade that are still not proficient. So in the communities we serve, that number is up to 77% of children in third grade are not reading proficiently by the time they get to third grade. There is this systemic problem that Raising Readers really trying to address, because the key is to get to these children while they're very young.
Christine, it may be evident to a lot of people, but how important is it for an individual to be able to read in terms of their overall educational and vocational success?
It is very important, and something to think about is that reading not only affects your ability to succeed in school, because for a while you're kind of learning to read and then you're reading to learn. So what we also recognize is that there's also literacy in healthcare. So, for example, being able to read nutrition labels and read instructions from your doctor or prescriptions or just general health information to avoid some of these kind of illnesses that can be much better managed with the proper information, such as unwanted pregnancies or diabetes and weight management. These are kind of making sure people exercise properly. All of that relates to having sort of good reading skills, and it's also affecting our workforce. So as I mentioned, in Massachusetts, we have the workforce is moving online, and there's a demand for sort of technology and innovation and entrepreneurship and whatnot. So all of this, having a strong literacy background and ability to read and build up your vocabulary is extremely important, which ultimately contributes to the workforce. So then we have a higher tax base from which to have additional resources, which then also ties back into people that are more educated are less likely to be a drain on the social services, because you are more likely to have a job. You are more likely to take care of yourself, so you're not ending up incarcerated or in trouble with the law for some reason, or you're not draining social services for health care because you know how to manage your health.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Christine Ward, and Christine is the executive director of a program named Raising a Reader. Christine, you emphasize on the website a little bit about the parent actually reading with the child and making it enjoyable. And I imagine the extra bond that occurs with a parent and child if they do this kind of activity.
Our model is supported by over 30 years of research, and it shows that being regularly read to by a parent or caregiver before entering kindergarten is the most significant factor impacting a child's academic success. So that is where we focus, is on that very young age and really reaching out to the parents, who obviously these parents have a lot going on, and we not only provide them with the tools being the books and the workshops, but also we educate them in the information, and they learn in our workshops kind of the science behind the brain, the synapses that occur in those early stages of life. I mean, some of my favorite statistics include the idea that by age 5, a child's brain is 90% developed. So just imagine the learning that goes on in those early formative years prior to kindergarten, and how important it is to expose children to books and vocabulary and ask them questions and have them repeat things and learn new vocabulary. I mean, all of this just helps prepare them so when they enter kindergarten, they're ready to learn. It's just a simple solution to a very challenging problem. And once the parents understand and hear why it is important to do this, and a lot of it's just cultural, like a lot of these families are immigrants, they were not read to necessarily as a child. And once they learn how important it is, they embrace the opportunity to read to their child. And sort of that bonding that you were talking about with the families just occurs naturally, kind of having that one-on-one time with the family.
Sure. You know, growing up, we heard a lot about a kid spending too much time in front of a television, and now they're spending too much time on the electronics. And it becomes difficult, almost a hardship, to make a kid sit down and read when they're going to school or to college or beyond. And I think it's a great program that makes it enjoyable for the parent and the child to have that bond and to have fun with it. Christine, at the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference?
We focus a lot on our impact and making sure that we are doing just that, because that is something, you know, we certainly want to share this with our donors and our funders, that we have evidence behind our program. So not only do we have these independent evaluations, but we also do pre and post surveys with our families. So we work with them at the beginning of a workshop program, and we get a sense of how many times they read to their children, how many of these read aloud techniques they use, and then we do a post survey. We match up those families to see the change, and that's how we share kind of, and that's how we measure this parent engagement and how that affects their children.
This is Joe Geiger. I'm with Christine Ward, the executive director of a program called Raising a Reader. And Raising a Reader is an organization that helps equip parents to be their child's first teacher and empowered to be active participants in their child's education, impacting the success in school and beyond. Christine, thank you for being a guest on our program. If somebody wants more information, how can they find you?
Thank you, Joe. Raising Reader, we have a wonderful website that has actually a lot of this information for any parents that are interested in learning more. Our website address is raisingareaderma.org. We are also on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, and you're welcome to reach out to us with any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Christine, for being a guest in the program. Back to you, Loman.
Pennsylvania has taken the first steps toward criminal justice reform, but action is needed on probation, expungement, and occupational licensure. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
I'm free to hug my family. I'm free to start over, is what Alice Johnson proclaimed upon her release following commutation by President Trump for a sentence of life in prison for a nonviolent drug offense. Thanks to the First Step Act, which received bipartisan support and was signed into law by President Trump, individuals are receiving a new lease on life. Matthew Charles, the first beneficiary of the First Step Act, recalled the conversation with his attorney after the judge signed the release, calling what was happening, quote, miraculous. Citizens who were freed, like Alice through commutation or Matthew through the First Step Act, are giving back by advocating for more federal reform. Well, we can provide that opportunity to Pennsylvania residents of all backgrounds from all corners of the Commonwealth by passing state legislation and getting it to the desk of our executive, Governor Wolf. At Americans for Prosperity, we believe that an effective criminal justice system protects people and preserves public safety, respects human dignity, restores victims, removes barriers to opportunity for people with criminal records, and ensures equal justice for all under the law. This vision is underscored by several key issues. First, due process. When a person is accused of a crime, the government must apply the law equally and in accordance with the rule of lenity, respect individual rights, and uphold constitutional due process protections such as the right to access an attorney, the right to a jury trial, and restrictions against excessive bail and fines. Second, sentencing. Criminal sentencing should hold people accountable such that the punishment fits the crime. Too many people go to prison, often for far too long, for low-level nonviolent crimes. And last, second chances. Those with a criminal record should be able to rejoin our community with dignity, experience a lower likelihood of recidivism, and have the ability to get a job, housing, and education. And so with those issues in mind, let's continue on an actionable path forward in this 2019-2020 legislative session. PA has already taken steps toward making fair second chances more obtainable. In 2018, Governor Wolf signed into law Clean Slate legislation that automatically sealed eligible criminal records. And now millions of people have more education, employment, and housing opportunities, and less reason to commit more crimes. It's time for us to take the next step. Let's be reasonable about giving second chances to help the formerly incarcerated reintegrate into society. Public safety is our priority, and common sense probation reform can get us there. allowing rehabilitated individuals to move on from their pasts and empower probation officers to focus on cases that ensure community safety. Smart on crime, soft on taxpayer reforms that make our community safer and improve lives is what we support. House Bill 440 provides for the automatic expungement of a record upon full pardon or acquittal. Someone who is legally innocent or pardoned should not face the burden of clearing their names, given the barriers to opportunity that criminal records present when it comes to housing, employment, and education. Occupational licensing reform, which would require that boards only withhold a license for convictions which are directly related to the practice of the occupation, and that the boards consider only the nature of the offense, the amount of time that has passed since the conviction, evidence of the applicant's fitness to practice the occupation, and other relevant factors prior to withholding a license. Many Pennsylvanians share similar stories to Ms. Johnson and Matthew. They're waiting on action from Harrisburg so they can move forward and have fewer barriers standing in their way of living a fulfilling life of contribution after their debts for a past mistake have been paid. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP, and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is now available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPDC-AM in Elizabethtown, WIOV-FM in Ephrata, along with WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. And the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just a couple of weeks away. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of grassroots conservatives every year in the Keystone State. This year's conference will be held March 27th and 28th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz will be the featured dinner speaker. Other speakers include former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum, L. Brent Bozell III from the Media Research Center, Congressman Scott Perry, John Gizzi of Newsmax, Dr. Paul Kengor from Grove City College, John Fund of National Review, and Kellyanne Pidgeon from Armed and Feminine. Many others will be speaking along with panel presentations, workshops, and networking. For complete information and to register for the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.